get up in the morning.
That was Hills Walter and Steve Offerman with their David Bowie-influenced song Shave. My name is Stuart McKee, and this is Musicians FAQ. You've got to love yourself. Welcome back to part two of our interview with Hills Walter. Last week we talked about some of the early musical influences that Hills had, including David Bowie and Elton John, as well as playing some of the early music and collaborations that he had done. Hills talked about the importance of having the right people on your team and having somebody that really understood your music and stood by you. Let's pick up the conversation where we left off.
Yeah, and I have another friend, Jamie Decker, who's been doing the same thing. He's done sound for us for quite a few shows as well. I think he was very influential in getting us into the Kitchener Blues Festival. Jamie's another, you know, solid source that's really helped the band grow as well.
I wanted to ask you about that. So how was it playing the KW Blues Festival? It must have been a blast.
It was interesting. We had only been able to get onto King Street for like with the Jam Blasters, and then Fogg finally got to play the first blues festival, but we were in front of the Tri-City store, which was really wonderful. I was so happy that Tri-Cities sponsored us. And I think that gave us a little bit of a foot in the door, but it wasn't until we actually recorded Into the Fog that the big stage came calling. And they gave us the Sunday slot with the where the breakfast is.
Yeah.
So we were down in the park. So we really thought, well, let's just go. We'll do the best we can and have a lot of fun. We really thought that no one was going to come and see the very first band on the Sunday afternoon. And when we first started, I think approximately, 100 people came in. And we were thought, wow, this is great. There's 100 people. By the time we were done the set, the tent was full, and that there was a group of people outside the tent. And we were thinking, where'd these people come from? Like, what's going on? And I think the fact that Holger Peterson had played us on the CBC radio, we had started getting maybe a little bit more following than I had thought. And it was a great experience, man. I have this really wonderful picture that sort of signifies the connection of the band finally, where we're all standing on stage taking a bow, but the audience is full and complete in front of us out throughout the whole tent. It was full. It was awesome.
That's going to be a great feeling. And I think there's something magical about playing that tent. I mean, I think sometimes the people who go down to that tent and the bands they have, I mean, they're real music fans. And there's a certain, they have the gospel breakfast on the last Sunday, the pancake breakfast, which we always bring our son out to. And, there's just some magic happening down there. And when you get a full tent and people are dancing, and it's just a really, really great vibe.
Well, that's another friend of mine actually handles that tent, Mark Fortuna. He's been in and out of my musical career as well. So, I've been really lucky to be working with some of the best techs this town has had to offer, like Leo and Mark and Brad and John Bice. And, just when you're connected with those guys, I think they give you that extra effort to make the sound on stage, crystal clear and awesome. Right. And Randy Rowland, can't forget him. He's awesome. When I was younger and we were playing the cornet, John Riley used to actually make board tapes for us, and he would bring them to my hotel room and everybody out and sit down with me, and he'd play the tapes. And he was the first person that made it very clear that you're not here to pick up girls and be a rock star. You're here to learn, and now my time with you, and here's the cassette tape, and we're going to listen to it, and I'm going to explain what needs to be done on that stage. So John Riley made music very serious for me very early in the start of my musical career. He was an amazing influence for us, and I don't think he even knows how much he connected with me. he made music more important than beer.
That's a huge undertaking. Well, and I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, for a lot of people who get into music, we all love music, there's a lot of music fans, but to really get into it to the level that you're talking about now, you've got to start kind of putting some priorities in place and putting some other things aside, and it really does become about the hard work and not accepting a second rate sound. You got to listen back and hear, where do we make some mistakes? How can we improve that show? And I think the proof is in the pudding. When I see you guys play, I mean, clearly it's a dedicated group of musicians and singers and songwriters. And, you've got to be able to really take that next step and to get to the next level.
Well, man, all you have to do is turn on TikTok and you can see the kids that are out there playing nowadays. They're amazing. Just amazing. So you got to stay on top of the game if you want to compete, you know, if you want to be there.
Yeah, right? Competition is fierce for sure. And especially as a band, I think, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, rock guitar music is dead or bands are dead and things like that. And, you know, maybe as being the overall sort of central part of popular music, they've lost a little bit of stature, but I mean, there's still so many people out there who love that stuff. But yeah, you're right. The competition, what the young people are doing, and you see it on TikTok, you see it on, you know, The Voice and American Idol and just on YouTube, it's unbelievable. And I think they had a lot of advantages that maybe we didn't have, where there's so many tools that are at their disposal. There's so much information, so many great performances that everything is available, you know, whereas we had to kind of sit down and listen to a record and pull the needle back and say, how did they do that again?
You know? Yeah, you should hear some of the lyrics I sang over the years and then found out, oh, that was wrong. Okay. Anyways, that was a fun part of actual like digital stuff coming out and having all the lyrics to find and that type of thing, right?
With a simple mind, better life with a bottle of the moonshine. Oh, I say, two rights don't make a wrong. I tried three times with you, a girl, now everything is gone. Oh, used to serve his time as an old deer blind, sipped it all away, most of his youth was wasted time. She's a good friend, been doing the family for a long, long time, drove my mother crazy, she drank it down like tainted wine. Yeah.
That was In the Backwoods by Fog Blues and Brass Band from the 2018 album Into the Fog.
So the Memphis International Blues Challenge. Tell me about that.
Wow. That was over the top. You know, when we did the show with the Ghost Town Blues Band, things started coming together rather quick. You know, Matt and I talked, and he said, man, you've got to get this band involved in, you know, the Memphis Blues Challenge. Like it's a good band. And then of course Jamie had been pushing us for a while. Jamie himself had a whole plan in his head, never said anything to us, but he was like, these guys are gonna come out and they're gonna play and do the challenge and we're gonna get them down to Memphis. Well, of course, there was an actual competition here in Kitchener that had to take place first. And we had no idea how we would do, but we went in, and fortunately, we won the right to go down to Memphis. Got aboard a plane, went down. Some of the guys went down in cars. And we, you know, put our show on a stage, and it felt right. You know, we weren't down there playing Memphis blues, that's for sure. We were playing Canadian blues. And by that, I mean true Canadian blues, blues that was developed by people like the band or...
Downchild,
yeah, you know. There was... If you sit down and listen to Memphis blues and the slow drawl that's in it, and then you listen to Chicago blues and that upbeat pump, and then you send that over a telephone line, and what comes out at the other end? Well, Canadian blues to me, right? You know, and it's a little bit rocky, it's a little bit bluesy, and it's saturated. And we took that down to Memphis, and we put it on a stage, and I think we did well. I think we could have been more prepared had we known some of the things we might have needed to, but we definitely had a great time. It was amazing. You know, Bobby and I got to walk out of one club to be dragged up to a couple's apartment to play on Bobby Whitlock's piano. And we did a little jam, you know, up in this hotel. Well, it wasn't a hotel, it was a condo, I guess, that looked out over the one of the main drags in Memphis. And it was at that moment I was starting to realize, hey, we're here in the place of music as we know it. You know, Elvis Presley, all those blues greats, B.B. King, Howlin' Wolf. Then you start actually searching. You know, you're going to walk up and down Beale, and you're going to start looking for all the little pictures in the clubs and talking to whoever you can to find out more about the music of that time. We just didn't have enough time. We just didn't.
Yeah, it's an incredible city. I mean, I would love to go back, but that, you know, I mean, and the band's playing in the park, and it's just so much going on. And Bobby Whitlock, I mean, wow. I mean, from playing from, you know, with back at Clapton on the Layla record, and Bonnie and Delaney, and I mean, just incredible songwriter, musician, singer himself, to be able to sit down at that piano would just must have been unbelievable.
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. Yeah, we had a fellow named Samson III. I can't remember his first name at the moment, but he sat in on drums halfway through our jam. There's going to be a nice little recording of it in Brad Marshall's documentary that he's putting together. It's a long process, but we'll see what happens there. Brad's been doing a wonderful background gathering of video footage and connecting us with the trip that went down to Memphis. And then we turned around, of course, and came all the way back to Kitchener and darted straight up to Elk Lake. So it was like, I don't know, 2,400 kilometers or something. I don't know. I'd have to look at that. Yeah, quite a trip. You know. Yeah,
well, that's great. And that's great to hear he's documenting that. I mean, there's been so much outstanding music and so many bands and artists out of Kitchener, and just different connections we've had with Mel Brown and you know, the Guess Who writing American Woman here in town and things like that. So it's awesome that that's being captured. So out of that contest, now you guys play, sorry, what you guys came out where at the end of that competition?
We were semi-finalists, so we were in the top 30 blues bands. According to the actual competition, you're in the top 30 in the world. However, after we played, there were some pretty amazing musicians playing down the strip, you know, after us. It was awesome. It was an excellent experience. So yeah, we were into the semifinals. Didn't make it for the last day. I went to collect our CDs on the last day that I had put in for sale, and a woman just handed me a bag of money.
Wow.
And I said, can I collect the CDs too? And she said, honey, there ain't no CDs left. And I said, wow, that's great. She says, just take the money and run. So that was pretty awesome. We sold out the CDs that we had given them. I maybe would have liked to have given them more, but that helped a little bit.
Well, yeah. So a whole legion of fans, and obviously you've developed down there. Now, you told me you had some gigs that were booked out of that, but unfortunately due to COVID.
Yeah, that got thrown out of the way. So our state's possibilities for gigs were, you know, we're going to keep the contacts, and hopefully we'll be able to figure that out to go back down. I mean, it's a real task to take seven players anywhere. And when it comes to going to America, you have to jump through a whole bunch of loopholes in order to get your visas and everything to go down and work. And it's very expensive. So for them to pay for a Canadian band to come down is quite a bit of money. And there's a process that we have to learn in order to go down. So yeah, we're hoping to go back down. I have a friend that I think is going to connect us with a proper process so that we have an agency down there and we don't have to pay the taxes from each state. They'll all go to one state, hopefully, and things to learn, you know, things that we'll have to learn if we're going to go down and play.
It's an education, I can imagine.
Yeah. So
now, what's with this? Is it several fans, or is there one guy that's going around with fog shirts taking pictures all over the place? And I saw one posted from the Arctic Circle.
Yeah. So what's happening is we're selling the t-shirts for the band. And, you know, I asked a long time ago if people could, you know, take a picture of themselves wearing the t-shirt somewhere special. And I didn't realize we get so many people sending pictures back, but even better, I didn't realize they start sending them back from around the world.
Right.
And so I started putting them together into a video, and I put that video on a thumb drive, and wherever there's a Jumbotron when we play, they can plug that in and put it on the screen, and it shows people wearing t-shirts, you know, the fog t-shirt in some incredible places. We have South America, we have Ireland, we have all across Canada, where else, I think Australia. Like, we've got pictures of people wearing them in places where people can connect, you know.
Right.
Grand Old Opry. It's pretty cool. You're gonna have to actually put titles under each person's, you know, picture as to where they are to connect, sure. Connect that, you know.
Well, that's great. I mean, all of that must just get you guys itching to get out and play again.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, if we don't get out to play soon, I think Al, you know, we're going to have to strap him down, you know. You know, he's so itching to get out and play. He's going crazy, you know. Yeah. Playing's really what Al loves to do. The whole band does, you know, but yeah, we miss it. We miss getting out there to play.
I think the fans miss you too. We want to see you guys back out there soon. So fingers crossed, everybody's getting their shots and wearing their masks and keep the distance going. And hopefully we can eradicate this and get back to live music in KW, well, worldwide.
Let's hope.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Come on down to the river, we're gonna have a mighty good time. Come on down to the river, we're gonna have a mighty good time. We can dance by the river, let loose and really unwind. Hey, you know your friends are going, so don't take too much time. Don't want to waste a moment to let yourself unwind. So if you go, you can save your soul. There ain't no rhythm or rhyme. Come on down to the river, we're gonna have a mighty good time. Come on down to the river, we're gonna have a mighty good time. We can dance by the river, let loose and really unwind. You love it till the break of dawn. Going down to the river, we're gonna have a mighty good time. Come on down to the river, let loose and really unwind. Your daddy don't want any shaking tonight, so don't go tell him what you're doing. All right! Cause when you're out, you know he gets nasty with you. He just can't stand us shaking the blues. Down by the river, down by the river tonight.
So on the note of gigs, do you have a favorite gig that you've played over the years, whether it was with Fog or a different band? Or
I got to tell you, one of my favorite gigs so far has been the West Coast Blues Festival, mainly because the people putting on the festival were really supportive of the band, and they gave us free rein of our stage, and we went in and we had there's nothing better than, you know, the sun going down as you're playing and the lights starting to come up, you know, because the darkness is coming in, and, you know, being on a beach when you're doing that, we're right there in Goderich. So we were in the center of Goderich. That was a really special show, you know, and we're hoping that we get to play the Lighthouse this year and experience somewhat the same sort of thing. You know, we've got a place up there, and, you know, we love the coast. So I think playing the coast is the most, you know,
it is unbelievable. Worst gig.
Worst gig. Wow. You know, I don't think there's such a thing as a worst gig for me. Even if I am choking because I have a cold, you know, I'm where I want to be. So it can be a hole. Yeah. And I'm happy.
You're going to play no matter what.
Yeah. I don't think there's such a thing as a worst gig, you know, maybe when a musician's not maybe out of sorts, right. that might be a worst gig, but nothing's going to stop the rest of us from plowing through.
Yeah.
You know,
now, and on that note, it must be tough. I mean, I always think, you know, keeping a band together, whether it's 3-piece, 4-piece, is almost like a marriage, or, you know, you've got all these, so your band, I mean, you've got all these people. How do you keep it going and keep everybody from sort of getting on edge and making sure everybody gets, you know, the exposure they want to get and things are clicking and humming along?
We're really kind of fortunate that the people that have stayed solid and true to the band right now, their most important goal in life is to be able to play music.
Right.
I don't think that we even have enough time to look at each other and get to know each other enough to piss each other off. You know, maybe someday, but in general, we're just focused. We just want to keep playing, and we've got a statement that we've made a long time ago. The train's rolling and you can get off anytime you want and you can get back on, providing, you know, it's a space for you, you know? So that's what we do. Right.
Now there has been some lineup changes over the last year or so. And I mean, is that just sort of natural evolution of the band?
I think that's a tough question, you know, because you never want anyone to leave or come back. But I think one of the changes was inevitable. The other change was based on a need.
Right.
So that's a really tough question.
Well, we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
So any sort of funny stories, war stories from the road, or funniest gigs, or?
Oh, if we got, I don't know, if we got funny stories with this band, sure we do. I think with us, the funniest thing that we ever have is our space on stage and how we're going to navigate for a show. I'm used to, throughout history, I've played with a lot of 4-piece bands and been able to run all over the stage, but I'm a bigger boy now. And there's a couple, you know, of us on stage. We all have to learn how to play in 4x4. Mm-hmm. And that's it, you know? So I think that was the hardest thing to do, to try not to get, you know, guitar necks shoved in your face or horns, you know, pushing you off the stage.
Right.
You know, that's the toughest thing. And finding a big stage is that's the best for us. You know, a big stage gives us some room. That's great. Otherwise, we've actually learned to stay in our spot and do the best we can to make a show happen, you know?
Yeah, I can imagine that's a challenge. I mean, you know, even some places, some venues I've seen for 3 or 4-piece bands, it's tight, but to have a band of your size crammed onto one of those little stages.
We've done it. We've put, you know, 3 of us on the floor or 4 of us on the floor just to get, you know, through the show sort of thing. And the rest of the guys on the stage, we've done it, you know, anything we can, you know. We'll put that guy up in the corner on that pedestal and that guy, you know, down there, as long as he's not in front of the speaker feeding back, everything's good, you know.
Yeah. Get inventive. So now you're working on a new album.
We are. Yeah. We have about 15 tracks together. We're at a point where we need John's input because truthfully, I think that's a blessing for us too. We got John to produce for us. He's the guy who can actually sit down and look at us and say, that's great. Okay. But we're not going to do that. We're going to do this. And everyone understands that's the man. That's the guy who really knows what's going on we just follow suit.
Sure.
So it's good to have someone there that can grab us, put us in the right direction, whether we think it's the right one or not. It's the strongest part of this band, is that the ability to say, all right, that's what John said, let's just do that.
I think that's healthy. I think that's important. And, you know, over the years, some of the greatest bands and the biggest success, they always had that strong studio producer, or, you know, somebody who could really be objective and, you know, make sure that the best songs are coming out, the best sound is coming out, and to really showcase the band. So it's amazing that you've got somebody you can trust like that. So do we have an estimated sort of release date for this?
That is questionable. I mean, we were supposed to have been recording 5 months ago. So two lockdowns now, and the lockdowns have really stopped us from recording. And I got to tell you, lockdown is probably the worst thing to happen to a band, because during lockdown, you listen to the tracks and you decide that needs rewriting. And when we get back together, we all have to say, no. We got to stay the course and not rewrite. So
you don't want to become analysis paralysis.
Exactly. And I got to tell you, lockdowns allow you to do just that. So I have actually gone off and set up my studio down in my basement, and I've been doing a dance album just to keep me sane.
Right.
And again, MIDI, I get to play with whatever sound I want with that MIDI control. And so I'm creating some pretty crazy, funny stuff right now. You know, I've actually done a CD. I'm going to throw it out there on CD Baby or something like that, just for fun. And I think I gave you one of those tracks too. So
yeah, can't wait to hear that.
All about this emotion, melancholy inside, locked away in a basement, musical journey alive. It's all right, it's all right. It's all right for you, but I got no ecstasy. It's all right, it's all right, it's all right for you, but I got no ecstasy. Twisting and turning, landing from falling, living in lockdown at bay. Happy in moments, choking on tears, clutching to hope, still alive. It's all right, it's all right, it's all right for you, but I got no ecstasy. It's all right, it's all right, it's all right for you, but I got no ecstasy. Melancholy happy. Come on, come on, come on, melancholy happy. Come on, come on, come on, melancholy happy. You can be happy if you want to be. You can be happy if you want to be. You can be happy if you want to be. You can be happy if you want to be. Melancholy happy. Melancholy happy.
It occurred to me that there may be a bit of a full circle moment. You'd mentioned earlier working with the horn players from the Lulu's band, and you know, Ray and David may have actually been them. Now, they had actually played on Prisoners of the Heart, which I had you come in and sing with Cheryl Leskin,
right? That's right,
last year. So thank you very much for that. I mean, but yeah, it was a real kick to have those guys on that record. I knew Ray from way back. I'd never met Dave prior to that session, but
well, thanks for inviting me. That turned out to be a pretty awesome song, you know. So that's, you know, and a good introduction to some new people, you know. Yeah. So
yeah, that's never stopped. We're always moving forward. Now I think we have another maybe a mutual friend, Ed Waba.
Oh yeah, Ed was the drummer for Jigsaw, and that was the first band out of high school that really connected us to the Kitchener scene. So we rocked, man. We rocked big time. We would play the cornet, we'd play the Highlands, go to work, and then play whatever bigger club we could get into. And we worked really hard, and it was all original material. That made us different than everyone else, because that's one thing I've been very fortunate for, is most of the bands I've ever played with have focused on playing original music.
Right.
I've always thought, what, you know, if you can do a cover tune extremely well, that's great, but who cares? I mean, for 10 minutes, you can be on top of the world and people can say, hey, wow, man, you did a great job of that Van Halen tune. And we can go, yeah. And then it's over.
Yeah.
You know, but if you can write a song and captivate people and actually have them still there at the end of the night, you're doing something right. And that's something that Jigsaw was able to do. You know, we connected, we put on a pretty good show. You'd have to maybe go back and talk to people that used to come out and watch us play, but they were constant. They were always there, and we had a great time, and it got us to the point where we were opening for bands like BTO, Molly Hatchet, you know, some good bands. And that was a great experience.
That's great. And I know Ed had a new album out last year, which I've listened to, a great album, and maybe we'll have him on a future show. Who knows?
Well, he's a pretty amazing songwriter, Ed is, you know.
He really is. I mean, he can sing, and he's a hell of a drummer and great songwriter, and just a really great guy. So so now I think we're probably getting towards the end of time here. We've got probably over an hour's worth of kind of recording here. So this may end up morphing into a two-part show. We haven't really talked about any of the songs specifically on the new on the most recent Fog album, Fog Blues and Brass Band Into the Fog. So tell me a little bit about some of those songs, how they came together, what your favorite songs are.
Well,
what songs maybe are going to kind of carry forward and kind of being part of the style going forward? Is the new album going to be an extension of that, or are we looking for a different sound?
The new album is going to have a change. I mean, the roots are going to be there, but Memphis did something to us, you know? So the new album is going to have a little bit of a change. I think what started this, like what started Fog off, was two songs that I wrote with Steve Offner and Ralph Bagley, who I played with in a band called Little Loco. And those two songs are what really got us into starting off on original content. So when this band first got together, we were just going to do a bunch of cover tunes. We're going to play more or less dance blues songs and just be a band that goes out and has a lot of fun. But that it quickly turned into, we better do something better than this, because this band's worth it. This band's there's a lot of talent in the band. So we better start connecting and see if we can actually put our best foot forward. So we did. And those two songs really did start us off. I mean, Steve and I wrote for years together, pretty close to 30 years I played with Steve. And he's a pretty amazing, you know, a person to write songs with, because we really bounced off of each other well for all of those years. So what we did is we went to some outside sources, and Bill Monanen brought two songs to the table. Now, Bill wrote, along with Copper Penny, wrote Sitting on a Poor Man's Throne. And Bill and I met after a show that we did. It was a show to support Bob Young's daughter, who had been through a fire that had taken pretty much everything they had. So Bill and his wife came out to see that show, and I ended up sitting with Bill, and there was a chemistry between the two of us. And I sort of threw it out there thinking he's just going to laugh at me, but I said, you know, hey, you might want to write some songs for the band. And lo and behold, he said, yep, I would like to do that. So that got us connected with some more songwriting. I also was thinking we should get one hit song and do something. And it was the 50th year anniversary for the Stink album by McKenna Mendelssohn Mainline. So I thought, what, might as well just give it a shot. And I called Joe Mendelssohn, and he said, sure, have at her. And he gave me his company name and everything to send everything off to make sure that he gets the royalties. And we went ahead and recorded it, and I sent it to him, and he said, good job. So that was pretty awesome. That was a great experience as well.
That was really rewarding to hear, for sure.
And we also had one other song written by Ted. Now I'm going to screw up Ted's last name. Is Zaworski, I think it is. Anyways, he did play with, I think he worked with Copper Penny, and he also worked with Yukon, which Bobby played in. Yep. And Ted's song's pretty amazing as well. So yeah, we got some pretty awesome people behind us for some of the songs. And then I ended up writing some more songs and bringing them down to the guys, and they connected with them, and they tore them apart and made them even better, you know. And that team's started working, and it works out pretty good now. So
that's great. Well, we'll definitely have you back when the new album's out and talk a bit about that and play some songs from that. But Bobby Becker, I mean, he's got quite the heritage himself. And
oh yeah. Yeah, it's coming from, I mean, there was a time as a kid, the Rembrandts, there's an article I read, and in the article they said if it wasn't for the fact that they were in Canada, they may have been the Beatles, you know, they may have been as big as the Beatles back when they were younger, you know. Canada was such a vast area to travel from gig to gig, and you know, there was no Radio City that they were immersed in as kids like that, right? Where you know, the Beatles were in right in the middle of the right place at the right time, right? Then Elvis was right there in Memphis, right place, right time. Elvis followed the black music and really was the first white singer that brought black music to the microphone. And I got to tell you, man, that's, once you get hooked into that music, you're there. That's where we got a gift, man. That's a gift to everyone in the whole world of music is black music. I love it. It's the best, you know.
I couldn't agree more. Just hooks you for life.
Oh yeah, that's for sure.
Just sitting by the fire, feeling kind of down. Disappointment written on her face. I knew I let her down. Now let me tell you, everybody now, expectations should be great. I felt alone like I had never known. And with myself, I chose to make.
Would you care?
I guess we are coming up on the end of our time here, Hills. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Awesome.
So I'd like to end the show with the questionnaire by Bernard Pivot, made famous by James Lipton of the Actors Studio. So we've got 10 questions. Are you ready for this?
Sure.
All right. What is your favorite word?
Love.
Nice. What is your least favorite word?
Hate.
What turns you on creatively, spiritually, emotionally?
Music.
And what turns you off?
I don't get turned off very often. You know what turns me off? Violence.
Now, this next one we may have to edit out because it's a morning show, but we'll give it a shot. What is your favorite curse word?
That would be the F word.
All right, we'll just leave it at that. What sound or noise do you love?
I love harmonica. I love it.
Isn't it great? What sound or noise do you hate?
The reed blown out in my harmonica. that's the one I hate. When you go for that note and it's gone. Yeah.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Acting, maybe that might be something. That would probably be it.
It seems a lot of actors want to be musicians. Musicians want to be actors. What profession would you not like to do?
I would like to stay away from ever working on sewers. That's a profession I don't want.
Thank God we have somebody that will take that on. And if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Lock the gates. Don't let them in. Not really. I don't know. You did okay, kid.
Nice.
That would be good.
Well, on that note, you did okay, kid. Thanks, Hills. It was a great interview. It was really a pleasure getting to chat with you and getting to know you a little bit better. And I look forward to getting this on the air so the rest of the world can hear it as well.
Awesome. Thanks, Stu.
All right. Take care, man.
All right. Ciao for now.
All right.
When a brother's last breath sets him free, the sky it turned gray to the darkest of days as the afterlife gathers to play. I won't look upon this as sad days. We all know it's coming our way. So I'll grab all those records and give them a spin. Let them play from beginning to end.
Hi, this is Hills of the Fog Blues and Brass Band. You're listening to Musicians FAQ on CKMS 102.7 Radio, Waterloo, with your host, Stuart McKee.